You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where nobody messes with Adam Wee. Rest in peace. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, and if you enjoy your trip here into the Midside today, please tell a friend. Referrals are our number one source of tourism. Our audience has been growing pretty well in the last couple of weeks, and people have been reaching out to us, so we really appreciate that. Thank you. You can also support us on Patreon. That's patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon, where you pay us per episode, or leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. Joining me today from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Yo, sup? It's Gay Pride weekend in DC, so property rates are through the roof. It's awesome.
Just for this one weekend, the property rates go up?
Yeah, it's also cleaner than I've ever seen it. It's tremendous. I love when the gays come to town. So much better than the environmentalists.
There's an overlap in that Venn diagram, though, isn't there?
Yeah, except that the gay environmentalists aren't as big of a contingency because they have enough parades as it is. So it's underrepresented, I would say.
Yeah. Parades are bad for the carbon footprint.
Yeah, indeed. So, like when the gays come to town, and as Adam Carolla says, anytime you have three or more gays, it is technically a parade of gays. So keep that in mind.
So West Hollywood at all times. Also joining us, from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
What?
Are you trolling are you trolling right
just
now?
Just James, I'm here. Right, I'm here now. This hasn't worked for me for the last 3 weeks. You just say James Elias, and I'm just like, yep, I'm here.
It's a good pod when you just nod your head.
That's
me.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, I'm nodding.
This is a metaphor for my life right now. Like, if I don't come up with a question to ask you guys so that you can talk about something, you don't come up with it on your own, and I get really frustrated because it's a really simple concept to think. I have a free moment to say whatever the fuck I want right now from the past week. What do I want to say?
It's just a lot of pressure to put on me all at once, Justin.
That's what
she
said.
Maybe it's that you need to give us a more enthusiastic introduction, you know. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Really? Like you're giving me line reading right now?
Yeah, I mean, that's like more of a like, you know, as far as like our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards. Like, is there a question? Do you care that I'm here? Are you annoyed? Are you tired?
I mean, to be fair, I am a little tired right now, so I will claim that. But the fact that you're giving me line readings... Mm-hmm. Is I feel like I know how women in Comey must feel right now. Let's talk about that in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Tall ass James Comey in the news this week for being tall. And also for something, lying under oath, maybe not lying under oath.
Being an ass.
Throwing Trump under the bus, maybe not throwing Trump under the bus. Basically, I think Duffel Blog said it best, which was a James Comey testimony confirms whatever you believed before it started.
That's amazing.
Which I thought about throwing in a Woker joke, but that's just too precious. So from the opinion pages of the New York Times, though, we have this gem of a story about the whole incident. Women say to Comey, "Welcome to our world." No, James Comey is not becoming the Caitlyn Jenner of his profession. The article is in fact about how James Comey felt threatened behind the scenes with Trump and you know, question. People have been asking him, like, why he didn't resign if he felt uncomfortable with what his boss was asking him to do, and why he kept taking calls from his boss, even though they were inappropriate. Why didn't he just come out and say he would not do what the boss was asking for? Well, if any of this sounds familiar, as dozens of people noted immediately on Twitter, if you switch genders, that is the experience of many women in sexual harassment cases. Yes, the internet has found a way to turn James Comey's testimony into a social justice crusade against sexual harassment. And you thought you'd heard everything. In recent testimony, Comey said of why he didn't do those things, quote, maybe if I were stronger, I would have. I was so stunned by the conversation that I just took it in. Which is, interestingly, an exact quote that Monica Lewinsky said after her whole
thing. Oh my God, Daniel.
This is a joke. There's no way this is woke. This is a joke.
I'm sorry, gentlemen. This is, in fact, woke. This is an actual article. There are tweets. They even quoted tweets from people. So you know it's true.
That gives it, I like it. Yeah, that this article quotes a bunch of, and has a bunch of pictures of actual tweets as though that gives it some level of, like, legitimacy. I feel like if there's a search function on Twitter, you can find a tweet saying whatever you want. Like, the earth is flat. Fuck the people who shot men into the space. Like, they were wrong.
Well, no, Twitter that's the funny part about the way journalism is nowadays. It's they just find crazy people saying crazy shit and quote it as if that makes it okay to quote because somebody actually said it. It's the equivalent of back in the day if they used listening devices and had them everywhere and just sorted through all the crazy shit people said and was like, oh, in this household they said X and that's a news story. That's what journalism has become.
Yeah, and it insanely grants the premise that if people are saying it, that lends some element of truth to it because that's their truth and their experience. Therefore, if people are saying it, then that is somehow just as good as, you know, that those facts being true in a certain setting.
Yeah, this is what I always say about English class. It goes back to the idea of if you can argue the interpretation, then that interpretation is in the book. Which that's is right. One of the worst things we can fucking teach kids because it ends up in this.
Yeah.
But James, Justin, one of the people they quoted is verified on Twitter.
How do you get verified on Twitter? I've always wondered that because I look at some of the accounts. They have like 1,000 followers and they're verified.
Yeah, there's no rigorous standard anymore. You just have to sort of fill out a form and tell them like why you need to be verified. And they'll basically do it. So.
Well, if you plan on becoming famous one day, it helps to be verified beforehand, I guess. I might do that.
Well, now there's no sort of anything to being verified. Like, before there was some, like, oh yeah, Twitter verifies that this person is legit representative of their account, but now who gives a fuck? Everyone's verified.
Right, well, isn't that good? Like, anyway. If someone isn't verified, that means you got to worry, like, hey, this Donald Trump account isn't verified. Maybe this wasn't actually tweeted by Donald Trump, which means it's probably, you know, the tweets coming out of that account will be, you know, markedly more reasonable than the ones coming out of the verified account, but still.
Right. I think that's case in point of Trump's account being verified, and we should all be fucking afraid. This Comey thing. I have no... This is one of the rare instances where I literally have no opinions on this.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck. I don't think it means anything. Or maybe it does mean something and I have no idea. But I've not yet been compelled to care about any of this. It feels like nothing to me. It feels just like political fluff.
Anyone else? The Comey thing or the sexual harassment link to Comey thing?
Well, that's... I care more about that because it's you know, a social justice pivoting thing. Just the Comey thing in general. Like, everyone in my office was watching his testimony. It's like, I don't give a flying fuck what he has to say.
Is what we had the Reddit last week where it said the Trump administration is becoming a reality show. What's the name of it? This is 100% just the next episode in the reality show. It's just being edited live. If they were actually producing an episode, this would be the week that it was about the Comey investigation. Now people are just watching it live. I mean, how is this any different from the 90s when everyone watched the OJ case? Now, I understand OJ was a very popular athlete. He was a very popular black athlete. He was very successful in the NFL. So he was a celebrity. And, you know, when a celebrity does something, people are like, oh, my God, a celebrity. They're different from us. They don't kill people. Okay. But why was that something that people needed to watch or listen to every day?
That's a really, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question.
I feel like it became an important... Sorry.
I never thought I'd hear more insightful commentary about the OJ case, but there it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think the OJ case did matter because of its racial... like, what it did to race relations and what it did to the way we perceive justice and how it should be carried out. So it was worth following, but I think this sort of, like... And similarly, our president... colluding or not colluding with the Russians. That's important. But do we need to see a blow by blow, or can we just get the story at the end of the day once all the information has come out? Can we just absorb that information and say, okay, yes, he did, or no, he did not?
But that's the thing, James, is if anyone in the media or blogosphere or podcastosphere, we need a better name for that, had provided any information at this point that said that there was even a modicum of evidence that Trump included with Russia, I might be interested. That's the problem. As much as I want to hate Donald Trump, no one has shown any evidence at all that he colluded with Russia. None. Nothing. Zero. Yeah.
Would you say there's reasonable suspicion for an investigation at this point, even though there's no evidence?
I guess.
Right, but there's no evidence. But... like it's kind of like, you know, if a cop pulls you over and you start acting funny. That's not evidence, but he may take that as probable cause to search your car. It's kind of like that.
Yeah. But even this discussion is what Daniel was just talking about. Do you really think if there was evidence, we in the mid-side would be privy to it? Don't you think that's like when the internal review board of the police investigates another police officer, that they have or don't have lots of evidence that the American public is never privy to because we don't have the credentials to see that kind of information?
I mean, I don't know about you, but Loretta Lynch actually would personally leak things to me while I was, you know, co-hosting for the Mid-Side during the Obama administration. So sometimes yes, sometimes no.
I remember that time Donna Brazile sent us the questions we were supposed to tweet at Hillary Clinton. Yeah. I remember that too.
Yeah, that's a great point though, Justin. Like what, you know... The only reason the media is at all relevant right now is because they're making themselves relevant by just producing this insane circus that it's just – it's a reality – it's something between a reality TV show and sort of the tribalism of a athletic event. We have a character in the reality TV show that our side is rooting for, and if the referee, aka, you know, the law enforcement officials that are carrying out this case, doesn't see the play our way, we're going to yell at him whether it was fair or not. It's just a big it's just a sporting event with none of the, you know, none of the honor of an actual athletic competition going on and being judged on objective grounds. It's just the bad part of that theater taking
as
place.
As someone who watches a reality show and has, although is now stopping for the reasons you're saying, since I was 18 years old, since I was a freshman in college, you just perfectly described Survivor.
Mm.
They had a transgender player on this season. And a gay guy at tribal council who knew he was pretty much going to be voted out threw a Hail Mary by saying, you guys don't understand how deceptive someone on this tribe is. Zeke is transgender. And then what happened? Everybody turned on him, not just on the show, and told him how bad of a person he was for calling out Zeke for being transgender. All of the fans did exactly what you said. They got this guy fired from his job because how dare he out the transgender person on national television, and how dare he note that that guy was transgender and had not told anyone he was transgender. And I say the guy, this was a woman who had become a man. So this is exactly what's already going on in reality TV, James. They're already saying team. Remember how everything's like, I'm team Brad, I'm team Angelina, I'm team Kim, I'm team Kanye. That's what reality TV is now.
And that's fine, it's isn't that? That's similar trans. To saying I'm team Patriots. You know, you just like the Patriots for whatever personal reason you have, and then you root for them. But it's not like injecting politics into the mix.
Documented objective reasons I like the Patriots. Let's not compare that to liking and being on team Kim Kardashian.
Yeah, well, but look, like those are objective reasons for you personally. If other people have different reasons, those are also objective for them. And then some people will have reasons that aren't objective, like, oh, they're winning, so now I'm just going to start liking them because they're winning. Like, that would be kind of
Daniel, please back me up here that he is equivocating between these two things.
This is a much longer discussion that I don't have the patience to get into right now.
No, I'm like, there's perfectly objective reasons to like the Patriots, but each of those objective reasons are going to be particular to the person, to the fan. But here in this Survivor thing you're talking about, people aren't you know, getting the true value out of the show you're supposed to get. You root for the person because you have some kind of personal affinity for them, as opposed to like, oh, well, they're the representative of my transgender clan or my leftist clan or whatever it is, and we're just supposed to root for that person because of those reasons. It just it deludes the whole experience. And actually, we're starting to get this into football too, aren't we? Only a little bit, or you know it better than I. Maybe a lot.
Well, I mean, the Colin Kaepernick thing, is that what you're referring
to?
Yeah,
and I mean, Tebow before that, but that was, you know, people really went after Tebow for that. When that's his, you know, look, I disagree with all of those beliefs that he enacted, but it's just like, I don't know. It seems like you're diluting the game when you make that your reason for being for or against him.
Well, what about Michael Sam? The gay football player, like, there were so many people behind him, you know, because he was a gay football player, but it turned out he wasn't actually that talented. But, you know, people were just saying, oh, he's being cut because he's gay, or he can't get a job because he's gay. It's like, I think, you know, sports is a little bit more meritocratic than you're giving it credit for. But how did we get here from James Comey and women?
Because this is just a big reality TV show. Oh, yeah, but we need to talk about women. We need to talk about how James Comey has to face the same struggle that women in general, apparently, like every fucking woman there is, face.
Well, James, it's what you're saying is they can't rationalize supporting James Comey against Trump unless he also has the same victim status that they do.
Oh.
Because that's the number one thing now is, are you a victim or not? And these people on the SJW side, it's all about just claiming more victimhood than anyone else.
Yeah.
So it's the same thing you're saying. Team Comey is now on their side, not because, you know, any objective thing happened that was wrong, but because he is also a similar victim to them.
Or at least they're stretching the story as far as they possibly can in order to make it look that way.
Oh, yeah, I'm not agreeing with what they're saying at all. Yeah. I mean, there's several issues with the number of things they're saying. One, it's not gendered to stand up for yourself, and it's not gendered to be a wuss and not stand up for yourself. There are men who are pushovers like that. There are women who are pushovers, and there are women who stand up for themselves. So that's the first thing. It's not gendered. So there are a number of things, but I was just saying how they're rationalizing it to support Comey, because everyone now just fits everything into their little interpretation box. You know, they can't just take something as it is. They have to say, how does this fit into my worldview? They don't adjust their worldview. They adjust the world to fit their view.
There you go. Although I think it's particularly funny to think of, like, Trump in the Oval Office with Comey, and Trump, like, puts his hand on the desk and rolls a pencil onto the floor. He's like, Comey, get that for me, will you?
That's, I mean, Comey's 6'8", so it's like that old cartoon where the little short guy's bossing around the dumb huge guy. The Looney Tunes cartoon.
Someone pointed out that Comey is the same height as LeBron James.
Yeah.
Wow.
Think about that for a moment. Anyway, from Comey to Kalanick, sexual harassment is in the news this week, apparently. As a 2013 memo from Uber, the Uber CEO Kalanick, surfaced, showing that he gave sort of explicit instructions about employees having sex with each other, like what they should and should not do, in a 2013 Miami retreat. This story is a tad confusing in the way it's reported, but basically, the Uber CEO sent out a memo after the company hit a particularly successful mark on whatever it was. And the memo was sort of, I don't know, unprofessional, I guess, or bro-ish, or I don't know, there are any number of ways you could describe this. But some of the things in it were like a list of do's and don'ts. So like number two on the list is, we do not have a budget to bail anyone out of jail. Don't be that guy. First of all, don't assume gender, Kalanick. Number three, do not throw large kegs off of tall buildings. Okay, good to know.
Please talk to Ryan McKillen and Amos Barreto for specific insights on this topic.
Yeah. Number four, do not have sex with another employee unless, and then there are subpoints, A, you have asked the person for that privilege and they have responded with an emphatic yes, I will have sex with you. And apparently it must be that exact phrase because it's in quotes. And B, the two or more of you do not work in the same chain of command. Yes, that means that Travis, referring to himself, will be celibate on this trip. Hashtag CEO life, hashtag FML. So, gentlemen, there's some other things to dig into here, but that's the particular part that's causing controversy. Basically, it's being said that this is a sexist memo that led to a culture of sexual harassment at Uber. What say you, Justin?
What do you mean? This is an inclusive memo. He says two or more. So he is okay with alternative relationships. He's not judging the type of relationship you have.
He's also asking, I mean, he's also demanding that you get oral permission.
Yes. That was the question I had about this entire memo. And the statement I had is, isn't this why we're in a culture of political correctness and why there's no personality anymore? What exactly is wrong with this memo? And maybe I'm being an idiot and you guys are about to laugh at me and make fun of me and expose me to the audience right now, to the Midsiders. But isn't he just telling you the rules of HR in a much more interesting and personal way? And wouldn't this rhetorically be more effective than the dry and boring HR letters that you usually get at work? Because when I get an HR letter at work, I don't read it. I just ignore it. And then if it becomes relevant later, somebody goes, didn't you read the email? I go, no, tell me what it says right now and we'll move on. And tell me what it says and I move on. But I would actually read emails if they read like this.
It's a good question, especially, I mean, it's a startup company. It's you know, supposed to be a little bit edgy and young and interesting. And I mean, I don't know what the left, and maybe James will give some insight here, actually could object to in this letter other than the fact that it was sent by a guy that they don't like.
Well, and he mentioned being a sexual being. That seems to be the problem here. Is he's like, I won't be having sex, FML, which implies he would like to have sex with an employee. It doesn't really say that. It just said, what it really means is if the opportunity that was worthwhile arose, he would have sex with his employee. But they're taking it as he would have sex with an employee.
Yeah. I don't know. I read this whole memo and I thought, you know, yeah, sort of quote unquote unprofessional in the traditional sense, but within the context of a tech startup, is this part of the Comey thing? Is this a thing that makes women uncomfortable? And the three of us are sitting around here going, we have no idea, but it's because we don't have a vagina. I don't know.
I mean, this is certainly no Ehrlich Bachman email.
Yeah,
no, certainly not.
Yeah, well, it's in that direction, but it's just perfectly, you know, it's perfectly reasonable. And he's literally telling you not to violate any of the common sense principles that corporations put in place about this sort of stuff. I guess what they're trying to say, think of it. Let's take the SJW advocate here for a second. Imagine you're a woman in this company. You're probably in the minority. Company's probably about 1/3 women at most, right? You're in this company. You're reading this email about all the sex that's supposed to happen. I guess that's supposed to make them uncomfortable. I can, like, think about it this way. Like, you know that would make some women uncomfortable. The question is, should it? There's no implication that any one woman needs to engage in sex. There's just this open thing where it's like, yeah, well, we don't know. We're going to party. Stuff might happen. I guess that's supposed to make them feel uncomfortable. Maybe it's just my white male cis heteronormative man-spreading privilege that allows me to not see like why you'd be uncomfortable with that, but use common sense. You know, some women would be kind of uncomfortable with this, right? I'm not saying they're in the right. I'm not saying they're in the right.
Uncomfortable with everything.
Sure. Again, I'm not saying they're in the right, but this is where they're going with that. I think that's
the
it's just this
word
gut
you said,
level
though,
reaction.
Was the word might.
Yeah.
There might be sex going on. It's not saying there will be sex going on.
And it's going to be Lisa, you know.
Also, by the way, it is a San Francisco company, so at least 40% of these employees are gay.
Yeah, I mean, that's That's another thing that adds in, you know, in gay culture, this is the sort of thing you hear all the time. It's like, oh, we don't know. Well, you know, like,
but this
the gay
is,
culture
but this
is wildly
James.
Confused.
No, no, no. We
James,
don't know what sort of sex might happen. No, that's, yeah, they're just all just confused.
Just walking around going, I don't know. Do you know?
They're just Neo from the Matrix and Frodo from Lord of the Rings, like constantly as they're at this party. They're just dumbfounded the entire time.
That's a good reference.
What were you saying?
I don't see anything wrong with this memo. Justin, do you have anything else to say about this? I'm surprised that this made the news. But
can you tell I have anything else to say about this? Because I keep trying to interject and you keep talking about gay sex.
Just trying to appeal to our audience, Justin. That's all.
Well, is there any way you can fit Canadians into this story, too? I mean, I don't know if you heard this week that they legalized duels again.
Well, we were talking about gay sex, so...
No, this is like the college principal, right? Where you know what happens the first weekend of college or at college parties. Like, there's a lot of fucking going on. And unless you accept the premise that, you know, one out of four women is raped in college, there are a lot of women who are complicit in that. And I intentionally use that word like it's a heist or something. But there are a lot of women who are consenting to that sex. So that's what happens at these events. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. Am I agreeing with it? No, I'm straight edge. I don't like the idea that, oh, it's the weekend. I'm going to go get drunk and fuck somebody. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. I don't think that's healthy. But that's what a lot of people do. So to just get mad at him for pointing out the reality of the situation, the way many unhealthy adults interact in our society, is messed up. And they can only really be complaining about this if they're assuming rape culture. This is like they've smuggled in the premise of rape culture and that, you know, men are raping these women. That's the only way this could be an evil email.
Yeah, what I'm noticing...
Company retreats or, you know, anything where people share like ideals or whatever. I mean, talk about... Remember the story we did on the Olympic Village where they delivered something like 40,000 condoms and they ran out in the first week?
Yeah.
Or whatever. Or, as I naively learned when I was still in the Objectivist business, you know, that the annual Objectivist conference is also a little bit of a sex fest. So, you know, I'm not saying that's a bad thing. That's a bunch of people who have like-minded ideas, young, mostly young, meeting each other, and it's, you know, it's a bit of a thing. But this goes on all the time. This is not an uncommon thing, and in fact, I think there's some element of his memo that should be applauded for at least thinking about, you know, reminding people to be cautious and to not put themselves in situations where they're going to get themselves or the company in trouble. So in some ways, kudos.
And what I think we're seeing mostly here, and Justin, you're alluding to this, is that what we're seeing, this is a trial balloon. This is them. They're always going to push the envelope a little bit. Let's see if we can smuggle the concept of rape culture implicitly into this situation. Let's see if we can implicitly smuggle the concept of rape culture into that situation. Where pretty soon, like, if you keep creeping this along, pretty soon any intimation that a man is going to have sex with a woman, you'll be able to smuggle rape culture into that and say, like, well, I'm not comfortable with, you know, watching Wonder Woman and then, you know, the scene where it's implied that, you know, Chris Pine has sex with her. Like, I'm not comfortable with that implication. And like, where you're going to get some level of people saying like, oh, well, yeah, that is kind of bad. As soon as you're saying that's bad, you're just assuming any sex between man and woman is rape. I don't know if we'll ever get there, but that's the goal of this power creep for their trial balloons.
Indeed. Speaking of other insanity, a University of Wisconsin Stevens Point student has asked a court to force her poetry professor to give her an A. The headline itself is pretty farcical, but the story just gets crazier. The student said she didn't think her professor's reading selection served her needs as a, quote, mainstream student. The student, who is 59, is pursuing a bachelor's degree at the university and said she wanted to study the classics. But when the professor of her advanced creative writing poetry course selected works other than those of Frost, Poe, and others, the student asked the faculty to reconsider the assignments. The student said that, quote, the works focused on lesbians, illicit sexual relationships, incest, and frequent swearing. She asserted her complaints resulted in her earning an F in the course, and unable to persuade the university to raise her mark, the student decided to sue. So, what the fuck is going on here, Justin?
There's like 80 million things going on here. So there's the cultural thing from the standpoint of... fuck, I can't think of the word. I don't want to say legislating. When you're suing over everything, what's that word?
Litigious behavior. Yeah.
Litigating. Litigating is the word I'm looking for. Yes. So there's first off, there's the litigating everything, which I don't know if you guys want to talk a little bit about. Because I want to talk about the angle of education and English education. So I get where she's coming from. She's essentially complaining about social justice naturalism is what she was being taught. You know, I saw this in school, too. It's like, especially with the student writing. This is way back when I was at Ithaca, between 2001 and 2005. Every story kids wrote either involves sex, drugs, or alcohol. It's part of the naturalistic approach to things, is that's what makes a story interesting. If people are having sex, if they're doing drugs, if they're drinking alcohol. That's what's considered a good story. So that's part of what she's bucking up against. But then the other side of it is... we trust the authority of these schools so much that she thought at 59 years old she had to go to school to get an education in the classics of poetry. If you could sue to the point that you're going to put together a case that says these are the classic authors that I wish had been taught, you already have the list of the classic authors in the classic works. Just fucking read them on your own.
Yeah.
Done. You've educated yourself. Why do you need this fucking guy who obviously doesn't know what he's talking about anyway, because he'd rather make you read this social justice naturalistic nonsense to teach you? You don't. And there are plenty of interpretations of all of these texts on the internet, because we know from our looks at the works of any movie that comes out, of any director, of Nolan, of Snyder, of Rodriguez, any director... that there are a million batshit theories about what a movie is about when it comes out. So you better believe there's going to be all the batshit theories about all this different poetry, too.
Like Star Wars ring theory.
You can read it all, and you can take what you want and decide what's true. Why did she need to be granted authority from this school?
Yeah. So to be clear about a couple points of this, the case was thrown out, although she's mulling an appeal. And for one thing to clarify is that people oftentimes say, I'm doing this so I won't be sued. You know, not in this case, but I'm just saying in general. Well, it's sort of a misthinking of how that works. You can be sued for anything at any time. So, I mean, as long as you can find a lawyer to file the suit, you can be sued. That doesn't mean the suit will go forward. It can be thrown out like this one was. Or it doesn't mean that you'll be punished. But you can be sued for anything. So, you know, the fact that she did sue someone, I hate when it makes... that's the news side of it. Like, that's the hook. It's like, oh, they were sued. It's like, well, anyone can sue anyone, so that's fucking stupid.
It's like impeachment.
Yeah, you can just go ahead and impeach Trump for, you know, being tall-ish, you know, whatever. But the side of this that is particularly interesting to me is a nuance of what you said, Justin, which is when I was in grad school and I was looking at the texts that were in my classes – you know, I wanted this degree for many reasons, but I also didn't want to just learn the shit that was on the syllabus because most of it was garbage. So instead of demanding that my professors conform to my will, one, I tried to work with them to change certain assignments. And if I couldn't do that, two, I would just engage in my own curriculum. I would do their work And then on the outside in my free time, I would work on stuff that I thought was more valuable. I would read text that I thought was more important. Education should be mostly self-directed, in my opinion. Yes, these professors, and hopefully the good professors, are going to help you along your path, but you need to be able to explore the field for yourself and decide this is something that's worth learning and this is not. So that's my only nuance to your comment, Justin.
How dare you add nuance to my comment? How dare you?
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought this article up, Justin, because I think something like this demonstrates demonstrates how we can have – yeah, I mean the fact you're bringing this up and you had the opinion you had is already adding a level of nuance that I think needs to be seen in media a lot more. Here's a story about someone who is literally on our side, someone who wants – I mean at least wants – you know, poetry that is much more representational, much more, much less naturalistic, has ideas behind it. She wants to read the actual classics, not just a bunch of garbage about lesbian sex and stuff like that.
I mean, when Robert Frost is the first person you list on your list, you're pretty close to romanticism.
Right, right. So, I mean, as I'm not an expert in poetry, but I assume that she is advocating poetry that's much closer to what we would consider good art, like actual enriching art, than the people at this university would consider to be relevant enriching art. So in some sense, the woman's on our side, but you know, this isn't about tribalism. This is about right and wrong. She's on our side in some sense, but that means that we need to be even more vigilant in policing her than we would someone else on the other side. We need to say like, no, like, yes, we agree with your artistic preferences, but this is not the way to advocate it. The university has the right to teach you whatever it sees fit. And if you don't like it, go to another goddamn university. You don't have the right to tell them what to teach.
I agree with what you're saying in principle, but the one question I have about that is, this is a public school.
Yeah, that makes
so
it complicated.
Does that muddy the waters?
Absolutely, it does. It does. But I think, yeah, it muddies the waters. But the thing is there just shouldn't be public schools. Therefore, we shouldn't even be having a discussion about what the, quote, objectively right curriculum there is to teach in public schools is. I think that is a really slippery slope towards – I mean, kind of what we already have, where it's like, okay, this is the accepted curriculum, and like public schools have to teach that there is no such thing as biological sex, there is global warming, communism's good, blah 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 blah, all this stuff. Like, you're only strengthening their side if you use that. I see what you're saying, though. It's a public school, so like, it makes the issue way too complicated for that.
To pivot off of what you said, though, you actually just provided an argument for people who are believers in relativism to support private education. Because what you basically argued was, when you have government-run schools, you're necessarily saying there must be one imposed monolithic truth taught in those schools. Whereas private school provides the ability to have a diversity of perspectives offered in this diversity of schools. So if you really believe in relativism, you would actually support private schooling.
I actually disagree with – I mean that makes a lot of sense, but I actually disagree with you here, and here's why. I don't think at the end of the day the motivation of relativism is really the kind of straightforward relativism that you're interpreting. I don't think I've met them, but I don't think that many relativists are really motivated by the fact that they just really love a big diversity of opinion and everyone being different and embracing that difference between people. I don't think they get off on the fact that there's just so many different ways to do things. I think the relativism and saying there is no objective way to do things correctly, I think it's just completely motivated by wanting to destroy the ways that do work, the type of art that is enriching. And so as a result, what better way to destroy the good than to governmentally mandate the bad? So I think it's still – this is why so many relativists are ironically – in favor of government control. It's because it's not about diversity. It's about destroying the good. So
that was a good spike there. Did you see how I set you there? That was a good spike.
Yeah, that was good. Very good. Don't let the audience know that this is all set up beforehand, though.
You're ruining my transitions. Silence. I kill you. Speaking of... Oh, government control. Right. Climate change. Can anyone tell that my head hurts this week? And I just, my whole face feels like it's going to explode from sinus pressure. A former NASA chief scientist had an interview with The Guardian where she claimed that Americans are, quote, under siege from climate disinformation.
Wait, so right. Does that mean we need Steven Seagal to protect us?
Right. Or Halle Berry.
I've been working on climate change for 40 years.
Please. Americans are under siege from disinformation designed to confuse the public about the threat of climate change, NASA's former chief scientist said. Speaking to The Guardian, Ellen Stofan, who left the U.S. agency in December, said that the constant barrage of half-truths has left many Americans oblivious to the potentially dire consequences of continued carbon emissions, despite the science being unequivocal. Quote, we are under siege by fake information that's being put forward by people who have a profit motive. Oh my. Quote, fake news is so harmful because once people take on a concept, it's very hard to dislodge it. I feel like we should stop there, have a hearty chuckle at both of those quotes, and then maybe move on with the article. But Justin, fake information being put forward by people who have a profit motive and fake news is harmful because once people take on a concept, it's very hard to dislodge it. Doesn't this also describe what her side is doing? Like, to a T?
That's why I made that meme back in the day. I don't know if any midsider out there remembers. I put it on the Facebook page and the Instagram page. It says, what if the term fake news was made by the people who make fake news? And it's the Keanu with his mind being blown from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, I believe.
That's what they do.
They put forward this idea to act like they're the ones not doing it. It's gaslighting, pure and simple. It's, oh, you know, we're not doing this. Look at the people who are doing this. They're accused of you of doing the exact same thing that they're doing. And the way they do it is they use this idea of the profit motive, which is really saying selfishness is wrong. So they sit there and they go, oh, well, you want to make a profit in life. Therefore, anything you say is wrong because you're self-motivated. Oh, so that means we must be good and we must have truth on our side because we're not after profits. We're just doing this selflessly. Where it's, as James just said, they actually have the ultimate form of the quote-unquote evil selfishness they're putting forward. They want to destroy the good because they don't believe they can succeed if it's a pure meritocracy. So it's this whole fucking messed up twist of psychology and philosophy to get you to think that they're not as bad as they actually are. I mean, this is why the character of James Taggart is so good in Atlas Shrugged, is he's doing this gaslighting without realizing it. And I mean, spoiler alert, but who gives a shit? You could have read the book by now. When he gets to the end, his self-revelation is so powerful because that's what he realizes he's been doing the whole time. He's not doing it. You know, we always talk about, and this is something I've always wondered since I was very young, even in college, is who are the people who are leading this and doing this intentionally and who are not? And, you know, we can debate this all day because you have to get to know each person psychologically to understand if they're doing it intentionally or not. But he realizes at the end of the book that he hasn't been doing it intentionally. But that's what he's been doing. He's been gaslighting Dagny the whole book. Oh, you're selfish. You're in it for profits. Therefore, you're bad. Which, you know, by implication means I'm good because I'm doing this selflessly. When really he's not. He's doing it because he needs to destroy. You only need to destroy if you don't think you're good enough to do it on your own. That's the only reason there is to destroy. And I want to be very clear about this because I can hear some libertarians out there going, well, what about when we have wars and retaliation? That's not destruction. That's self-defense. I'm defining destruction as when you have to stop someone preemptively. Now I've just opened on a whole other can of worms in regards to war, but can of worms in regards to war. It's when you preemptively, when there's no sign of aggression from the other person, just assume their very existence. I'm not saying their ideas. I'm just saying the simple fact that they exist and have ability. So, you know, the fact that LeBron James exists and has ability means he deserves to be destroyed. Just put aside character, put aside philosophy, put aside psychology right now. It's simply the fact that if we were to both look at LeBron James and James Comey, because they're both tall and could potentially be good at basketball, we would say we have to cut their limbs because that's not fair to people who aren't tall. That's what I'm referring to. The only need to destroy in that way is for that reason.
Okay, we'll bring that back to this particular article a little bit. You went a little abstract there for everyone.
A little abstract? I kind of just went, and I was just like, I'm still talking, and I like what I'm saying, and I like my sound of my own voice. So,
just unprotected philosophy.
The climate change thing. It's about the fake news thing.
Yeah, it's about control. It's the fake news thing. It's about the idea that, oh, you know, they're the ones who are wrong when we're only doing this. What is this guy's relevance if he doesn't say this? What is his relevance? What is the value he's adding to the world?
Woman.
Oh, sorry, woman. Excuse me. What is this woman's value? What is she adding to the world if people don't accept that climate change is real?
Well, nothing. I mean, her whole sort of career is based upon the fact that she is one of the savior class. She is one of the people who knows better. She is one of the elite who understands the truth versus the mass of plebeians who do not and who will destroy themselves without her, you know, not necessarily her rule because she's not a politician, that's a certain game, but sort of her knowledge of how best they should live their lives.
But that's the rhetorical trick she has. She's given herself that ethos, that character, to convince us that she has value when she doesn't. So her entire value is telling us how to live because she is the truth, but she doesn't. So she has to say that the truth is motivated by profit, and that's the way she gets us to keep paying attention to her, and she continues to be relevant. She's been doing this her whole life to the part that now it's on a national scale because somehow we're so fucked up that she got all the way to government power doing that.
Yeah. James?
Yeah, I think you guys have pretty much covered it.
I shut James up. All right.
Yeah, you got me to shut up. I have no extra twist on it where it's like, oh, it looks one way, but actually it's the other. It's actually, you know, it's not a ghost. It's actually the dude you met at the beginning when Scooby-Doo. You know, it's not nothing like that. Like, yeah, you guys really nailed it. Like, I mean, this is how the left is going to use science to destroy science. End of story.
Well, credit be to Justin, because I continue to sit here with my face throbbing, so I can't think
about it. No, just look for the gaslighting. That's the number one thing that we
Justin,
need
what
to
is gaslighting?
Realize in our society.
Gaslight, to me, gaslight is that's the part of San Diego where the bars are. Like, what is gaslighting?
Yeah, but the gaslighting that's even San Diego is gaslighting you with the gaslighting district. Like, everyone has this idea, oh, San Diego's so great, go to the gas lamp district. Is it that good? Is the gas lamp district in San Diego that good that you have to drive all the way down to San Diego?
I mean, I was there anyway. I didn't drive all the way there for the fucking gas lamp, but it was fun.
I mean, yeah, if you live in San Diego, like, okay, cool, it's a place to hang out. But, like, I don't know, I don't think there's that much worth hanging out in San Diego. But no, we covered gaslighting in a previous article where that, I don't remember exactly. Daniel, maybe you can help me here. There was the woman who wrote the article that this is all gaslighting now, that's the social justice approach.
No, but where does this phrase come from and what does it mean? You keep saying it and I have no idea what you're saying.
I'm going to get to it.
Okay, okay.
I'm just trying to remind the audience, because remember, people listen to this.
Right.
Remind the audience that we actually talked about this before, Daniel, right?
Yes.
Right, do you remember the article?
No.
All right, maybe see if you can find that while I'm explaining it to James. So gaslighting is a psychological concept, and it's the idea that someone who has done wrong convinces you that you're the one who's doing something wrong in order to cover up their own misdoings. So the best way I can explain this is on the greatest example is from Survivor this past season. There was this guy named Ty, and not coincidentally, he was this little gay Asian from San Francisco. And I'm saying that not because I'm saying gay people do this, but I'm saying the social justice movement encourages them to do this to maintain their victim status. And he would constantly lie and flip on alliances. And then whenever he did, he would start crying and saying, why does nobody respect me and why does nobody let me play the game? Well, you are playing the game. You just got caught. But when he does that and he starts crying, he makes people look bad. Mm. And what happened in this previous season that just ended is this male football player who used to play for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers knew the way he was and went to him and said, if you want to stay in the game, give me your hidden immunity idol. And people said they were he was bullying Ty because Ty said, why does he treat me like this? Why is he treating me like this? Well, that's a result of your behavior. But you get away with saying that you deserve to be treated however you want to be treated, because anyone who treats you poorly, that's their problem. So that's what gaslighting is. It's the idea of, I'm just going to say what you are doing is wrong, so it distracts from all the wrong that I have done. And I come out looking like the good person no matter what. And what it really does is to the person you're gaslighting, it actually makes them think that they're the one who's doing wrong, so they feel guilty about what's going on.
You know, the tactics are things like, you know, someone will, you know, like if a woman is, if like a girlfriend is gaslighting her significant other, he'll say like, hey, I think I remember you doing X. And she will say unequivocally, no, I never did X. And either you're lying about it or you're attacking me or whatever it is, even though she did do X. It's sort of like this use of, if someone has any doubts whatsoever, it's the exploitation of those doubts in order to manipulate that person's sense of reality and what's
really
happening.
People who are really good at it, and we're going into personal experience here right now, but who are really good at it, is there are necessarily doubts. Like, no one remembers 100% what they said. So something my ex would do is, oh, you promised me this. No, I didn't. Oh, yeah, you promised me that. And then you're a bad person because you promised me that and you're not following through on it. I can't deny whether I promised something or not because I don't remember exactly what I said. And it gets down into wording. Oh, well, this is exactly how you said it. Well, I can't argue with that.
You're just like, yeah, I don't want to be a liar. I don't want to break my promise. I guess I'll do it.
Right, and then it becomes constantly escalating, constantly using that technique to always maintain control. And so it gets even worse with social justice, because it becomes all about feelings. Oh, well, I'm feeling this way, therefore you must have done something wrong, right? That's what the guy in Survivor was doing, Ty. Whenever he cries and gets upset and is hurt, oh, well, you must have done something wrong because I'm hurt, and that's the reality of the situation.
Yeah. The term is actually relatively new. Actually, it comes from a 1938 stage play, Gaslight, wherein a husband attempts to convince his wife and others that she is insane by manipulating small elements of their environment and insisting that she is mistaken, remembering things incorrectly, or delusional when she points out these changes.
Fuck.
So.
That's gnarly.
And the article continues that it's a frequent tactic of sociopaths and narcissists. So
right. I mean, we hugely see this in California with the narcissism. Hugely. Yeah.
Bigly, even.
So speaking of destroying the myth that people have created, you want to talk about a documentary that attempts to do that?
Ooh.
Let's do that in The Hopeful Romantic with JML. A couple reviews here that we've been saving for a few weeks while we talked about a lot of the big releases that just came out. The first is The Red Pill. This is a documentary by a woman named Casey J, who used to be a feminist, who goes down the rabbit hole of the MRA, the men's rights advocate community. The Red Pill is a term that they use. They got it from The Matrix, and it's the idea that once you see what they're saying, it will change your view on reality. This documentary is now available if you have a Hulu Plus subscription, correct?
Yeah, it may or may not be on Netflix. I haven't checked, but certainly on Hulu Plus.
I couldn't find it on Netflix. I couldn't find it. It was supposed to be on Amazon, but I could never find it on Amazon. It wasn't until Daniel told me about it that I finally watched it because I had been looking forward to this. Now, I want to be very clear. I want to separate content from presentation in this review.
Please do.
I think... What?
Please do.
Yes.
For this particular film.
Right. I think this content is very important. And I understand why they use the red pill metaphor. They actually have a woman they interview. KCJ interviews a woman in this who, when I watched a video from her on YouTube, sent to me by Midsider Katrina, I watched this video and it actually did sort of red pill me. So her name is Karen Strawn, and she has about a 15-minute video where she just talks to the camera about, it's a vlog, about male disposability. Watch that, and that really will make you think about the way men and women interact and the way we've developed our relationships and why relationships are the way they are. So I want to say that I have a lot of sympathy for the content of this documentary. But my main issue with it is presentation. I didn't think the conceptualization and the production of this documentary presented the information in the best way possible. I thought that KCJ actually undercut her journey. I got about, was it 35 minutes in or there were 35 minutes left? I don't remember exactly, but there was a vlog. So she was doing video diaries as she was going through this journey. And every once in a while she would cut back. But there was a vlog where she said, you know, every time I listen to these guys talk, and I'm paraphrasing right now, every time I listen to them talk, I agree with what they're saying, but then I push back with, oh, but what about my experience as a woman? What about women's experiences? And that was what the men were saying to her throughout the documentary was, it's such a given, the feminist approach, that we push back against any argument against it. Yet this diary was buried in the middle of the documentary. I would have put that diary at the front, and then I would have constructed the entire documentary using the same footage she had to build towards her breaking through that barrier of the feminist assumptions, of the given premise of the feminist. And it would have been much more appealing that way rather than just simply stating the facts. And some of the facts being stated, like the domestic abuse ones, were very appealing. And to me, the most just visually appealing part, which you can't get away from just because of what it is. And I say appealing, I don't mean like it makes it good. I just mean it's visually convincing, is she actually showed a circumcision on a child. And you see the blood and everything. And I only watched it out of the corner of an eye because, I mean, if you watch that video and you don't go, shit, that's male genital mutilation, I don't know what to tell you. So I think it's good that this documentary was made, but I would only give it about a 6 because of the way it was constructed.
I don't really have much to add to that. My assessment is very similar. There are certain particular points of this documentary that are incredibly compelling and moving, and stories about children being taken away because of the inadequacies in the court system, and stories about certain women in the feminist movement trying to help men and being shut out because they were trying to help men. The fact that that men are actually an incredibly high percentage of domestic abuse victims, sort of shockingly high, but that there's literally one shelter in the entire country to deal with men of spousal abuse.
That mini section was actually very good because they got the woman who founded the first ever domestic abuse shelter on the documentary. And she said, yeah, I wanted this to be non-gendered. I wanted this to be for men and women, but I was shut down and then kicked out of my own organization.
Yeah. Yeah. Very powerful. So any particular moment could be interesting and compelling, but watching them in a movie format, in a full length feature format, something was off about it. It's sort of disintegrated in terms of how it wants to present this information and how it wants to present the journey, which is too bad because I think she got a lot of good footage. It got a lot of good interviews, but she undercuts herself by the way it's presented. So, I mean, overall, I think it's worth watching if you're interested in this, in learning about this movement and seeing that, like she did, that it's not some fringe, horrifying anti-woman movement.
Oh, and the guys aren't nuts who are advocating it. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing visually to see in this movie, is these are just like normal guys. They're not crazy.
Yeah, indeed. But I would say the movie is like a 4 or 4.5 in terms of, you know, overall quality. So
I haven't seen this movie, but I have seen Karen Strom's vlogs, which were very clear. But let me strongly disagree here, as I'm sure the movie is disintegrated, and that's because I think from what I've seen of this movement, I don't think it's really essentially distinguishable from feminism. I think the fact that they talk about the fact that she felt as though she had swallowed the red pill just means the following. It means she was a feminist, which means that her entire view of morality and social structures completely revolved around a Marxist view of oppressor and oppressed. And when she did this video, she simply reversed her roles about who she thinks the oppressor is and who she thinks the oppressed is. And so thus she swallowed the red pill, but she hasn't swallowed the real red pill of reality, which is to realize that that entire viewpoint of seeing all social relationships as the oppressor and oppressed in that sort of Marxist dialectic, that entire way of seeing things is really wrong. And I think you're just like with the feminists, you're going to see people in the men's rights movement who aren't insane. They're just basically responding to a lot of the insanity coming out of the feminist side. But just as with feminists, you're going to get non-insane feminists who are simply responding to real sexism that does sometimes still exist. But ultimately, I think the entire root of the idea is complete. Just is rooted in this victimhood mentality. Are you going to be able to find cases where men don't get a fair shake? Absolutely. And, you know, we should correct them. But the entire premise that this victim, that we're going to center our social view around victim and oppressor, like that is not appropriate in today's society to view that on any level. It's about all of us are people and we all have equal rights. It's not about victim and oppressor.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd be interested if you change your opinion after watching this, because I don't think it's presented like that at all. I think they're pretty clear about that, in fact.
I feel like the Caitlin or the what's her friggin' name? The Strom videos, Karen Strom or not Strom. What is her name? It's Strom, right?
Karen Strom.
Strong.
Straughn.
I mean, I've watched a good 30 or 40 minutes of her videos because, like, some new ideas like this really suck me in. I'm just like, whoa, like, how do you come to this? And I would imagine that her videos are clearer than this documentary, because documentaries tend to just be disintegrated and like, oh, here's a fact, here's a fact, here's a fact, and it just comes off as cherry picking. Again, I haven't seen the documentary, so I can't really speak to that. But that's what it sounds like what you're saying. Her videos were quite clear, and they quite clearly indicated to me that she has this, you know, Marxist viewpoint she's interpreting everything through. She just happens to be a little bit more honest than most people, and so she happened to see it from the other side too.
Yeah, she might. She might in particular. I don't know. I literally only know of her from this documentary, and she's not a huge part of this documentary.
Okay.
She's maybe in 2 total minutes of it, and they're good 2 minutes, but it's mostly from, you know, there's a lot of legal stuff in the documentary. I'd say it's more a documentary about legal issues than anything else, honestly.
Right. But let me ask you this. And from what I've heard about legal issues regarding alimony and custody of children, there is a lot to be said for changing those defaults when it comes to marriage laws. But let me ask you something. What does that have to do with a societal culture of male disposability? I think you're going to have a hard time arguing that in the same – I think that is absolutely parallel to the feminists talking about the fact that some women sometimes get raped means that we have a rape culture. I would say that though you cannot move from one to the other. Just because we're unfair to men in our laws does not mean we have this cultural bias against men. I think it's again, this is where I start saying that it comes from this fundamental this attitude that victimhood is some fundamental part of how social systems work.
First of all, it's not an argument that we're fundamentally anti-men. It's an argument that we're fundamentally pro-women. And there's a big difference between that. And it's a very easy way to get from male disposability to the issues with alimony. It's the assumption that it's the man's responsibility to take care of the woman. Therefore, in any divorce proceedings, anything that he makes necessarily goes to her because he's supposed to take care of her.
And I see that as an old-fashioned notion that absolutely used to be true. If you look at the way we used to structure society, it is now out of date because of the way society works now, and it should be eliminated for that reason. I don't think those laws are on the books because of some kind of idea that men are less of people than women. I think they're considered to have different responsibilities, and you can talk about whether that's acceptable or not, but we got to get
right.
We got to stop seeing this.
The argument is that because of these differing responsibilities, it's not viewing people as equals. It's not saying one's a victim and one's the oppressor. It's saying they're not being viewed as equals. And they're explaining why the traditional roles developed. And it's definitely the argument is that we've evolved past that. But the point is, just like any cultural evolution, and just like we're seeing now, as we've talked about many times on the show with the dating revolution, with, you know, the changes in race relations since equality has been achieved, that it doesn't happen overnight, and these old assumptions need to be acknowledged and understood in order to move past them, because change is not just like you flip a switch. That's the argument.
Yeah, this might get me in trouble, so
okay.
Hate mail goes to @DanielTRichards on Twitter. But honestly, most of the guys in this video seem to be eschewing the notion of victimhood and seem more like, you know, the rights advocacy of the Martin Luther King Jr. camp as opposed to the Malcolm X camp, where it's like, no, we don't see ourselves as victims. We don't see ourselves as lesser or women as lesser. It's just that we want, you know, actual equality, which is what feminism wanted in the beginning too. That's all we were looking for, period. And the idea is, let's not go overboard on the pro-feminist side to demonize men. But at the same time, you know, there's no reason for us to demonize women either. So I thought the documentary was light in that regard, but.
Well, again, I haven't seen the documentary, but I've heard enough from this to really be deeply skeptical about this. It's kind of like feminism. It points out a lot of things that it seems to me like it points out a lot of things that do need to be changed, but then they try to make this wider issue about it. And I disagree with that wider philosophic position that's only implicitly hinted at. But I mean, yeah, thank you for the disagreement here, and I think our audience really benefited from hearing two sides to this.
Woot.
All right, let's review something else now. Let's go to something lighter. Chasing History is a comedy time travel sitcom on Fox that's set in Boston, where a janitor at a college finds out that his dad invented time travel, and then he gets a history professor from that college to start traveling through time with him. I initially watched the show when I had food poisoning, so maybe my view on it is colored. It also may be colored by the fact that it's set in Boston, and there are very many jokes that are... Daniel, maybe you can explain this or not. To me, maybe they're just Boston in jokes that I thought were hilarious. But, you know, it's got two of my favorite things. It's got Boston and time travel. So it's automatically a 7 at that point. My one concern going forward with the show is I don't know where it's going to go plot-wise, because it starts with them traveling back to the revolution, and then John Adams and John Hancock actually become characters in the present day, where they get them from the past, and then somehow they keep coming back to the present day. So it's almost like the show has stagnated and isn't using time travel as much as possible, although the writers may be doing that intentionally to save stuff for later seasons. I don't know. Ultimately, though, I give this show a 7.
First of all, the show is making history.
My bad.
Not chasing history.
My bad.
But it doesn't matter because the show's canceled. So it's not going anywhere. Yeah.
No.
I know. It was kind of funny. I liked it. It was a little bit of Boston in humor, but I thought the writing was pretty clever. There's a scene where they're trying to get the revolutionaries I forget which way it is, but it's like the woman is telling the revolutionaries, like, this is 2017. Arguments from logic aren't going to work. Now we're all about emotions.
Yes, that was hilarious.
Great scene. Certainly better done than I gave it justice just then. But it doesn't matter because it was canceled, along with Son of Zorn and APB. I don't know what that is, but
all never saw canceled. APB, but Son of Zorn was really bad.
It was terrible. So
that's unfortunate.
If you want to enjoy sort of something, you know it's going to end. It's nine episodes. You can watch it on Hulu. I thought the writing was genuinely good, and I thought the comedic acting was even better. So
the woman who plays, like, was she the water delivery woman? Is that what she's? What's her job? The delivery woman.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm.
She was very Boston. The character was hilarious with how Boston she was.
Yes.
All right. A little bit of a turn. Well, I was going to not do a transition, and I was like, I better do a transition. You know what segment is next.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Kidnap stars Halle Berry. And I think that this is meant to be the black female version of Taken, maybe? So what happens is she's at the park, and she's playing Marco Polo over walkie-talkies with her son. And then she says Marco, and her son doesn't say Polo back, and she freaks out. And then she finds out a blonde white woman, which I guess I appreciate the fact that it's not a man kidnapping the kid, but a blonde white woman kidnaps her kid, and she starts chasing him. Which even the trailer had to have the scene of her dropping her cell phone, which is just fucking annoying because they had to like write that out. Why isn't she just calling the police while she's chasing this car? So they had to even include that in the trailer to make it believable. But then as she's chasing this car, the car starts becoming violent. Not the car itself. It's not Transformers. But the woman driving the car starts using the car as a weapon to ram her and ram police cars and everything. And now here's the thing. Now I'm going to transition into my review of this trailer a little bit and my thoughts on it. I know that I argue against like saying, well, this is what would happen in reality because it's not naturalism. But is kidnapping one kid this important that you're going to start doing like ramming your car into people and stuff? Isn't there a point where this thief is just going to give up and throw the kid out of the car and drive away just because this is too much of a fucking hassle? Like,
yeah,
it's a little bit
of
a Walt on Lost syndrome, isn't it? Well, why are they so obsessed with this fucking little black kid?
On the other side of that, like, because they've kidnapped your son, you now have carte blanche to, like, launch vans up in the air and destroy entire highways and cause mass havoc upon a city, like, because someone kidnapped your kid. Like, also, what I got is from the cell phone dropping scene was that even in movies, women be dropping their cell phones.
Would have been better if it was in a toilet, but yes.
So that's right. I've owned an iPhone since the iPhone like 3G or some shit. I have never once dropped my phone because every time I hold it, I tell myself it's a $900 device and I won't fucking drop it.
Yeah.
My wife, bless her heart, has dropped hers 3 times in the past year and shattered the screen. That's just
But that's
phone.
The other thing, too. When you drop your phone, how do you drop it to break the screen? I drop my phone sometimes, but you know what breaks? The fucking case I have on it.
What? What are you doing to these phones, Justin, that you're breaking the case?
They're the plastic cases that I got for $8 on Amazon.
You got to get the rubber one, like, that's has the sea otter on it, and it, like, bounces. I even sometimes just kind of throw it just to watch it bounce.
I'm not paying $30 for an iPhone case that makes the iPhone 5 times the thickness of it.
That's what it takes, Justin.
If I'm
going
to pay money to make anything 5 times as thick.
Okay, that's where we're going to cut that conversation off. Circumcise that conversation. This movie looks terrible. It is Taken, but with a black woman, except that she has no particular set of skills.
Right.
And
it's not
she doesn't
Taken.
Have good delivery either. She's just not intimidating when she says, I'm going to find my kid. It's
a suburban mom. That's it. It's not compelling at all. Call the police. The end. End of movie. Tackle.
Borrow someone's phone. Tell them that your child has been kidnapped and then call the police. Yeah.
That's right.
I was watching this with my friend and he just looks at me like my friend's really good at these like one-liners where he's just where he looks at me like, am I missing something? And then he just says, why hasn't she called the police? Or no, he says, why haven't the police gotten involved yet? Like by the end of this 2-minute trailer,
Yes. In a shorter time than it took to watch his trailer, she could have asked someone to use their phone. Like that's all we need to see in the trailer was, oh, my son's been kidnapped. 911. End. Coming this summer, a 14-second film.
No. So James, I take it you're tackling as well.
Yeah, I'm tackling the shit out of this.
Tackle.
What okay. happened to Halle Berry?
I feel like she aged well. She's aged, but I felt like she aged well actually in this trailer.
She did. She was everything for a while, and I mean, now she's not fucking schlock.
But when could she act? When could she ever act?
I don't. She didn't need to act with that rack.
I know. I saw Swordfish.
Who didn't?
No, I mean, I want to point out that she does go to the police in this trailer. And she looks around at all the missing trailers, or the missing posters, and she said, all these people reported their kids missing too, and look what happened. So it's they use false induction to get to her. That's what I don't understand too. It's like, she's chasing this person, then she's sitting in the police station, then she's chasing this person again. As if like you can take a respite from a car chase.
Okay, let's move on. We've given this trailer more time than anyone should.
I am tackling as well.
Tackle. Second trailer.
American Made stars Tom Cruise as a commercial pilot who is recruited by the government, maybe, and then starts working for like 80 different drug trades and agencies or something?
Unclear.
Yeah.
I think he's first working for the CIA and then he starts working for Pablo Escobar.
Well, I think the CIA is involved with Pablo Escobar somehow.
Unclear. The trailer, the story sort of nominally is Tom Cruise pilots a plane with cocaine and money. That's the story. Any trailer that has the American sort of goofy action, like, I don't know how to exactly explain it to you, but it's like that music, like dun 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 dun, like any of that music. Fuck you, I'm not in. It's gonna be a terrible movie. It's gonna be completely shit. No, tackle.
Tackle.
See, I am in. Like that thing you described with the song and everything. Yeah, I'm in. The only thing that makes me worried is sort of something that like has made me worried on a lot of movies lately, Wiz, is because it's called American Made, I'm worried it's just going to be it's going to have a bunch of anti-American schlock just thrown in. But other than that worry, I think this will be fun.
Hug.
Mm-mm. See, I knew James was going to like this, but I also want to know, Daniel, did you just try to do the Mission Impossible music?
No, that's dun, 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 dun. No, that's completely different.
All right, well, I am tackling this as well. It just looks like this movie has been made a bunch of times before, and I just don't want to see it again. So.
Tackle.
Although Tom Cruise will be on a motorcycle this movie, I can guarantee it.
Third trailer.
First Kill looks like the white male version of Kidnap.
Yeah!
Christensen's kid is kidnapped. Oh, well, no, they find a guy who gets shot in the woods. And they bring him back, and then he kidnaps Hayden Christensen's kid to force him to rob a bank. And then Bruce Willis is the cop, and he just tells Hayden Christensen, why didn't you go to the police?
Yeah, so with Kidnapped, we had the executive sitting around a table going, what if we had Taken with a black woman? And I feel like someone said, yes, green light that. But also, what if we had Taken, but with two white guys? And they said, yes, green light that too. So this is gone far enough. I like Bruce Willis. I wish this movie looked better than it did. I'm really being negative this week, but maybe it's because of sinuses. But Hayden Christensen makes everything worse, so that's an automatic no. And then also this premise of, like, I need to rob a bank in order to save my son. Pass.
Tackle.
So I am going to push back on the Hayden Christensen critique a little bit. Isn't this the perfect role for Hayden Christensen, where he's a slightly incompetent white father and the other white guy who knows what he's doing is telling him he's incompetent and how to actually do things?
No.
Okay. Well,
the perfect role for Hayden Christensen is background tree number 4.
The only other thing I will say about this is I'm going to hug this simply for Bruce Willis. And this reminds me a little bit of the movie Hostage, where it looked like from the trailers it had no right being any good, but Hostage is actually an enjoyable movie. So I think it may be similar to that just because of Bruce Willis.
Hug.
James?
Yeah, I mean, I this is just all covered. I've covered everything there is to say about this. There's nothing left. Goodbye. Tackle.
Final trailer.
Coco is Pixar's latest. We, if you remember, reviewed the short based upon this movie. And now we have the trailer. And I am actually going to let Daniel handle this one because he is the Pixar guy.
You're going to let me handle what? The first review? The description? What do you want me to do?
Do both. The description and the review.
Dead people come back to life and terrorize the living.
Due to music.
In Pixar's newest offering. No. Basically, this is based on the Mexican tradition of Dia de los Muertos, where we celebrate skeletons, apparently. This young kid, who I guess his name is Coco, takes his dog Dante. They discover a magical guitar and they get transported to the land of the dead, and the dead don't know what to do with him. It's sort of a fish out of water story, I guess. The original teaser trailer for this, which we may or may not have covered, looked tremendous in terms of its animation scope, and this trailer doesn't diminish that. I'm a little more worried about the story now that a little bit more is revealed. I don't know exactly what the conflict is, other than we need to get this living kid out of the land of the dead and sort of all the bumbling that happens around that, which isn't much of a story, especially for Pixar. So I'm still hugging this.
Well, the description on the trailer says he wants to become a musician, but his family has sworn off music for generations.
Oh, see, that wasn't in the trailer at all, which is interesting. Yeah, that's a little more Pixar-y, so...
I don't know. I mean, Toy Story is just Buzz Lightyear and Woody trying to get back to their kids so they can be played with again. So, you know, they made a pretty damn good story out of that.
Yeah, it's not so much that I don't think they could do a good job. It's that, you know, there's been this question about whether or not Pixar has sort of lost its ability to do good original stories anymore. And this is one of their first attempts, you know, since that criticism has been laid. So we'll see. I mean, yeah, it was like Toy Story was a simple plot, but it was a simple plot done so beautifully and for the first time, like in that style. So that helps. But I don't know. I'm hugging, obviously, because Pixar. But
hug.
Yeah, and I have a hard time with these. Because I'm not a huge Pixar fan like you are. I'm actually one of the people who likes Cars. And, you know, everyone else is like, Cars is the worst movie ever, blah, blah, blah. It's awful for Pixar. So I don't know. I honestly don't know how to judge Pixar. So, I mean, I wish I could give this somewhere in between a tackle and a hug. But I think this is an appropriate time for me to give the hug?
Hug?
Yeah. James?
I'm a straightforward hug on this. Like, this is a good, this looks like it'll just be another good Pixar movie to me.
Hug.
All right. Well, let's talk about other things that we're not sure about as we play another round of Woke or Joke.
All Welcome to the game show where the contestants, in this case Justin and James, have to decide which of these headlines are actual social justice headlines and which are satire. We'll go through three rounds, and each round I'll read three headlines. Two of them are real, one of them is a joke, and Justin and James have to decide which is woke and which is joke. Are you ready to play, gentlemen?
Yes, sir.
Sure.
I need a little more enthusiasm out of you because I have negative enthusiasm. So you're going to have to kick it up a notch.
From our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Hosting the show now. I'm from the hills of white privilege. Daniel, lay the first one on us.
How was that for a line read, Daniel?
Yeah, it's like a six. So,
God, come on, man.
Round one.
I was told six was
average. Round one, all about kids. First story.
Makes that transition really awkward.
That's right. Future dad seeks help because wife wants to raise gay, genderless children.
Oh, God.
Read that again. Future dad seeks help because wife wants to raise gay, genderless children. Headline number two. Zales apologizes after debuting extra small rings for child brides.
What?
Zales apologizes after debuting extra small rings for child brides. And headline number three. Telling your infant there's no reason to cry is baby shaming. Once again, telling your infant there's no reason to cry is baby shaming. Justin, woke or joke?
Okay, I have so many questions about the first story. Future dad. So, and this is going to lead into which one I think is the joke. But is this a dad from the future? Like, are we dealing with, like, reporting across decades?
Of course you would go there, Justin.
Justin tries this, like, to find time travel in all things.
Or is this just like a dude who will one day be having kids with this woman? And then isn't this also just called a relationship and a reason to break up with someone?
Well, as the rules state, I cannot actually give you any extra information about any of these stories until
No,
after.
I understand. I'm just telling people my thought process. Yes. The second one, Zales, that's so hyper-specific. The fact that it actually names Zales and it doesn't say, like, oh, well, jewelry store. Because the fact that they would actually name a certain one makes me think that that's true. And then the last one has to be true. It's the idea that if we're psychologically reinforcing certain gender roles, even as a child, we're already warping that child's psychology. So based upon my questions on the first one and the reasons I think the other two are true, I think that the first one is the joke. The idea that the future dad is asking for help because the only help you need is just dump the bitch.
Okay, James, woke or joke?
I'm going to disagree with Justin here. I think the first one actually is absolutely happened. I think that one's woke because as illogical as Justin points out, it is. It's illogical things happen all the time. So that one's woke. The second one, what was the second one? I wrote woke, but I forgot what it was.
Zales apologizes after debuting extra
small
rings.
Oh, yeah, that's woke. That happened. Now, the third one, I wrote joke with a question mark. What was the third one again?
Telling your infant there's no reason to cry is baby shaming.
So I thought of all of these, that sounded most like the joke. But I gotta say, I think these are all woke. That sounds like something. That third one, like, sounds like something they would say. I think they're all woke. They all actually happen.
I should inform you that since that would be against the rules, you would be basically forfeiting this round.
Yeah!
James, if that is your final answer, but...
Oh, wait, I thought you said before we went on air that some of them are going to be all woke.
No, but thank you for...
Did you not pay attention to instructions pre-show?
Thank you for revealing the spoiler alert at the end. No. What James is referring to is that as of next week, or whenever we play this again, we're going to change the rules such that there could be a round where none of them is a joke.
Fuck. But sorry. Sorry. Should we just cut that? I didn't realize we weren't... that was a reveal. That was really bad. Sorry.
This is ratings gold, James. That's right. This is what the people live for, actually.
Just give me the fucking point.
Okay. James gets zero. Gentlemen, it's perfectly fine because you both tied at zero for this round.
Come on. Really? The baby shaming one is false?
No, the Zales one is false. Actually, the Zales one is a click hole joke. And the other two are from Heat Street.
Really? So, okay. Yes.
Indeed.
See, here's the
problem. That's why we play the game, gentlemen. That's why we play the game.
If I start reading Heat Street, this entire game is destroyed.
Yes, don't do that. That'd be a terrible thing for everyone. So we go into the round two, tied at nothing. Round two is all about Trump. So.
Joke.
Thank you. Story number one. Dominatrix dresses up as Hillary to punish remorseful Trump voters. Dominatrix dresses up as Hillary to punish remorseful Trump voters. That's headline number one. Headline number two. Donald Trump's EPA head denies pollution is man-made. One more time. Donald Trump's EPA head denies pollution is man-made. And headline number three, quote, show your rump to Trump, plans nationwide mooning during president's visit. Once again, show your rump to Trump, plans nationwide mooning during president's visit. James, woke or joke?
Okay, so number three is definitely woke because it's just basically the visual version of the fart in story that we did a few months ago.
I forgot about the fart in.
Yeah, where everyone's going to eat beans and then show up to a Trump rally and just gas everyone there, biological warfare sort style. Yeah. The second
in real life, the campfire scene from Blazing Saddles. Yeah,
right. So number two also seemed woke to me, but number one, what was number one again? That's the dominatrix one.
I will happily say that one again. Dominatrix dresses up as Hillary to punish remorseful Trump voters.
That sounds like something someone would make up. I'm going the first one's the joke.
All right. Justin, woke or joke?
I'm so confused right now. Because here's the thing. I'm not ready to say number three is woke because it feels like a story someone wrote. Hey, romp rhymes with Trump. Let's all moon Trump. But on the other hand, people are that retarded that they would think that that's clever. Are they that organized? That's the thing. I don't believe that they're that organized that they would do that. So I don't know. I'm having a really hard time with that. Number one seems like it's true because it seems like one person does this. So it's really easy for this to be true. And somebody just picked up a story of it because it's amusing. So I want to say that that one's true. And then remind me number two. Oh, number two, you put this in for your own edification, didn't you, Daniel? Because this seems like completely something you would put in. It's just like, yeah, the EPA guy is against global warming and against all this idea that man is the scourge of the earth. That one seems 100% true. This just seems like something social justice people would get mad about, that someone would dare point out that they're just anti-man. So there's no way number two is a joke. So which one did James pick again? He picked one as the false
Correct.
One? So for That's the sake of competition, I'm going to go with three as the joke. The Trump rump. Lump. Jump.
Yeah. Again, we maintain a tie, gentlemen, as you both missed it.
What?
Number two.
Fuck off.
Is the joke.
No,
I think you
wasn't.
Listen more carefully at number two, Justin. It's Donald Trump's EPA head denies pollution is man-made.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Never mind. That's the joke. That comes from the Beaverton.
Well, are you telling me because pollution is man-made?
Yeah, like by definition, well, yeah. Isn't it?
By definition.
Well, here's the thing.
The fact that we're using the word pollution to automatically assume that it's negative because it's not natural?
No, I get your point, and that's kind of why I put it in, because it's a little bit tricky, but that's the joke. That's the,
I overthought it, is what happened.
Overthought it.
To defend Justin and I here, like, that's something that a woke article would say, is they would misconstrue something the EPA had said and say, like, oh, well, he's implying that pollution isn't caused by man. That's so heteronormative.
That's why we play the game, gentlemen. This is why we play. And the number – that first article is absolutely true. It's from Vice. It's a frightening article.
That's the real revelation here, is that that one wasn't a joke.
I don't know if that's more scary or less scary than the Vice article about sex in prison between inmates and guards.
Yeah, it's Vice basically makes all of its money lately on weird sex stories. So.
Yeah.
The name
all right, heading into the final round.
Wait,
we are tied.
I have a question. These Rump for Trump things.
Yeah.
Like, when are they happening?
It's happening. You don't want to see the fucking cover picture for this, by the way.
Well, that was my next question. Can we see who's participating in these events ahead of time to see if it's worthwhile to see these rumps?
This will be in the UK, apparently.
Oh,
so
well,
you'd have to travel. But
no, thank you.
I'm sure if you do hashtag show your rump to Trump, I'm sure you could see it on Instagram. So. Round three, gentlemen, is all about identity. Headline number one. Doctoral student identifies as a hippopotamus tranimal. Once again, doctoral student identifies as a hippopotamus tranimal. Headline number two. Finally! Exclamation point. Methodist Church ordains first non-binary trans person as deacon. One more time. Finally! Methodist Church ordains first non-binary trans person as deacon. And headline number three. I'm such an ally that I chose black as my race on college applications and got in. One more time. I'm such an ally that I chose black as my race on college applications and got in. Justin, woke or joke?
You're a fucking joke because you got better at picking these.
Yeah, you really did.
I'm trying, man. I'm trying.
So I want to say number one is the joke because it sounds so ridiculous. But that's also why I think it's a trick now. See, now I'm fucking trying to outthink Daniel, which is the fucking problem.
Impossible.
I want to say that one's a joke. That one's a joke. Because it sounds obvious. The second one is, one more time, what's the second one?
Finally, Methodist Church ordains first non-binary trans person as deacon.
Yeah, that one's true. That one's 100% true. It's way too specific. It's way too just like that's what they would celebrate. Yeah. And the Methodists are crazy. So the third one, I want to say, and this is probably where I'm overthinking it. I want to say that would be legal fraud if you got into a school by putting you were black when you're not on your application. So I don't know how he would get away with that, or she or whoever. Z or they or whatever fucking gender pronoun I'm supposed to use. So my instincts are telling me with everything I have that number three is the joke, but my instincts have been wrong so far today. So number two is the joke.
Oh! Drama. Okay. James, woke or joke?
All right. So you picked number two, huh, Justin? So...
To be fair, I just shot in the dark because I've been completely wrong all day today. So I just picked a number.
Like you're better off guessing than falling into Daniel's trap, basically. Like, yeah,
I will not play the crying game with Daniel.
So I just immediately thought that the ally application was the joke because it's just like, you can't claim to be an ally when you're getting in instead of a black person. That just makes no sense, like especially by their logic. But then I realized, like, wait a second. Like, this is Daniel. This is a trick. Like, Daniel has smuggled one of the insane-sounding ones, like, or one of the reasonable-sounding ones in as the joke. So that leaves it between the trans deacon and the tranimal. The trans deacon one is too close to having actually happened, I feel like. But so you just took a shot in the dark, I guess, on that one, and you picked the one that sounded the most reasonable, I guess, as the joke, right, Justin?
Correct.
Yeah. I'm gonna split the middle here. I'm probably gonna pay for this, but I feel like splitting the middle. I'm gonna go with the tranimal as the joke, because that is kind of just a funny word. So I'm gonna go with number one is the joke, because it's somewhere in that nether region between sounding kind of reasonable, sounding pretty woke, but then also like that could be a joke. So I'm going with one, and this will decide it. Or we're both going to be zero.
No, it won't, because neither of you are right.
No! What? This horse shit!
The joke is the last one.
No, it's not!
I mean, to be fair, I did say logically that was the one that made the most sense as the joke, but I doubted myself and guessed
God,
that
God, you
random.
Have us all turned around now. Yeah, I was totally ready to say that was the joke, too.
This is why I play the game, gentlemen. For this exact reason. 0-0 over three rounds.
Yo, I feel like I just watched the helmet catch again.
That's right. So we'll go to the tiebreaker, which I have, and this is just basically arbitrary, but we have to pick a winner. So here's the tiebreaker, and I'll allow Justin to decide if it's woke or joke. The tiebreaker is... Student gets perfect score for drawing elephant pooping on Trump for a class project.
That's impossible.
Justin, woke or joke?
That's woke. That is 100% woke. That's how little faith I have in the education system.
One last time is student gets perfect score for drawing elephant pooping on Trump for a class project. Final answer, Justin?
I told you, that's woke. I have no faith in the education system.
I agree.
You finally got one right. It is, in fact, woke. Congratulations. Yeah. That is a real story.
That's how bad our education system is in this country.
Congratulations, Justin. You barely won woke.
Yeah. It's a win. Still counts the same.
I think the real winner here is Daniel. I feel like we should give Daniel, like, I don't know, like maybe 1.5 points if no one gets the question, because that just means like you are now a contestant. Because usually one of us wins at least, and then you get nothing. But if no one wins, you get 1.5. And so I feel like Daniel wins with 4.5 points, 4.5 points this round.
What?
I like it. It's sort of like win Ben Stein's money.
Yeah. In what logical world are you giving him 1.5 points for? Just go, if one of us gets it right, we get a point. If none of us gets it right, he gets a point. Why does he get 1.5? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Because it's harder for him to score than for one of us to score. You see what
I'm
saying?
No, it's not.
That's right. That's right. James is saying, I'm not good with women. That's right. So yeah, we'll put these up on the midside.com. And also you can tweet your score at us. Let us know. You want your score, or send us a text message as one midsider did last week. That's perfectly fine too. But this woke or joke thing is getting increasingly more interesting.
Can we not encourage them to share our phone numbers with each other?
I don't care. It's just a phone number. I can block you if I have to. It's fine. If you have woke or joke stories, you can send them to me on Facebook or in a Twitter private message. Midsider Ronnie's been doing that. Midsider Mark has been doing that. And Midsider Michael, I think, and a few others. If I missed you, I apologize, but I appreciate it. Some funny satire stories that didn't make it were like Navy Christians, USS Gabrielle Gifford as first gunless warship. Like, I really liked that, but it seemed a little too jokey to put in. But yeah, and then of course last week I said, you know, ISIS accuses Kathy Griffin of cultural appropriation. That one was really funny too.
I don't get the Navy one.
Gabby Gifford was the congresswoman who was shot.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's hysterical.
Yeah, that's not funny.
Until next time, stay woke or not.
All right, what did we learn this week? Daniel?
Other than I'm really good at picking fake headlines. I learned that, you know, this attack on the Uber CEO is really, it's part of this whole rape culture thing, and I didn't even realize it when I was reading the story ahead of time, so I wanted to thank Justin and James for their remarkable insights on that issue. So there you go.
James?
I learned two things. I learned what gaslighting meant, finally, instead of just hearing Justin say it every day for the last 3 weeks. Now I know what that means.
We talked about it on an episode prior to this.
Maybe
was it William on the episode? Must have been William.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually heard what it meant before. Like, I just keep hearing you use it. But the other thing I learned is just this men's rights movement, and I should look into it more, if only just to understand some of the cultural forces shaping the world, shaping American culture right now.
Justin, what'd you learn?
Or Justin?
I learned that I take everything so not seriously anymore that I think everything is a fucking joke. So I can't distinguish between reality and jokes anymore.
That's why we play the game, gentlemen. So if you also cannot distinguish between reality and satire, you belong in the mid-side, and good thing that you're already here. But other people like you, who also can't distinguish, should be here. So why don't you tell them? You have people who in your life, you know, who are a little skeptical of this whole social justice thing, or think that the left and the right are a bit out of control in the way they present information. Bring them into the mid-side. We need more mid-siders like you listening now to listen in the future so we can grow our army and eventually overthrow the U.S. government. Oh, wait. What? But instead of doing that...
The opinions of Daniel T. Richards do not necessarily represent the opinions of the other people in the mid-side.
Except when they do. So, but in the meantime, we're not going to overthrow the government. We are going to overthrow the culture. That's right. So we need your help to do that. You can follow us on facebook.com/themidside, tweet at the midside, Instagram at the midside, Snapchat at the midside. And apparently you can text us as well. That's cool. I'm not giving you my number, but if you have it, text me. That's right. I'm talking to you. And then you can also go to themidside.com/podcast to see all the past episodes. If you want to get notified when new episodes come out, you can subscribe on iTunes or Google Play. While you're there, searching for The Midside, leave us a 5-star review. We love our 5-star reviews. We're really happy and really proud of all the 5-star reviews we have, even the ones that don't like us who still give us 5-star reviews. Those are our favorite. Those are our favorite indeed. And then, of course, if you have some extra cash laying around, maybe you've got a sweet income tax return this year and want to help us out a little bit, you can go to patreon.com/themidside and you can choose to give us actual money every time we produce an episode. Did you hear that last part? Every time we produce an episode. So not, you know, monthly. It's not like a subscription fee. It's not something where we're going to head off to fucking Puerto Rico when it becomes a state and decide that we're going to hang out there for a while and not do any money or any episodes and just live off your money. No, no, no. Only when we produce content. Any amount of money is helpful, from 10 cents an episode to $2 to anything you want. And it helps us keep the lights on. I'm sitting here with a light on right now. It's phenomenal. I love that it's on. I want to keep it that way. So you can help us there. And thanks to the Liberty.me folks for syndicating us. We love our libertarian friends, even when we disagree on foreign policy. But until next time, mucho love to you. Bye-bye.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emlesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a joke!